I have a message from another time. Airy Productions Unlimited and the Bacon Comics Group present Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Rogue Squadron, Volume 1, Number 5, Crucible, by Benjamin D. Hutchins. Hi, that's me. Friday, July 9th, 2410. Cheryl A. Zukowski, Flight Test Center. Muroc 3, Outer Rim Territories. Galdgoa Bowman was returning to his room in the visiting officer's quarters from the coke machine at the end of the hall when he heard voices coming from around the corner up ahead. Recognizing them, he halted just short of the corner, peeked around, then jerked his head back. As he had feared, the speakers were Isamu Dyson and Kozue Kaworu, apparently just getting in from Pancho's. Well, he assumed they'd gone to Pancho's. Gald couldn't envision Dyson taking a woman anywhere classier or more expensive for dinner, and besides, this was Muroc 3. "Well, thank you for a lovely time, Lieutenant Dyson," Kozue said. "In the interest of inter-service cooperation, I may try to teach you a dance other than the Funky Chicken someday." "I was not doing the Funky Chicken," Dyson protested. "You may not know it by that name on your planet, but I assure you, that's what it was," Kozue replied airily. "Anyway, thank you and good night. We've both got a lot to do tomorrow." "No kiss?" Dyson asked. "It's funny, but I have a slight hearing problem," Kozue said conversationally. "Whenever someone says that, I hear, 'No punch?'" "You're a tough broad," Dyson said, his tone petulant. Then he added cheerfully, "I like you." "God, what old English vocab file did you get broad from?" Kozue asked. "Good night, Isamu. And hey, good luck tomorrow. But not too good." "And the very same to you, Lieutenant Kaworu. Good night." Gald heard Dyson approaching, looked around, then ducked into a broom closet. Leaning against the inside of the door, breathing hard and trying not to make noise doing it, he listened to the other pilot walk off down the hall, open a door, close it again. The Zentradi pilot's fists were clenched, his teeth gritted, as he fought down a surge of emotion that threatened to overwhelm him. The storm passed within a few moments, and when it did, Gald slid down the door until he was sitting on the floor, knees up, head in hands, panting. "Why does Dyson have this effect on me?" he wondered. "It was years ago that all that happened. I spent years putting it behind me. And now this sight, hell, just hearing him, sets me off again." The internal question was mostly rhetorical, though. Gold knew what the problem was. It wasn't just seeing Dyson again. That had made him angry, sure, but not furiously, almost uncontrollably angry. It was the idea of Dyson with a woman, even one like Kaworu, that filled Gold with rage. It brought everything back, all the things he had struggled so hard to bury, to forget. With an effort, Gold pulled himself together, got to his feet, picked up his can of coke, and went back into the hall. Kaworu's door was shut, a strip of light showing underneath it. For a second he considered knocking, asking if she was all right, then instantly discarded the idea. She'd sounded fine, had the situation well in hand, and anyway, she'd just laugh in his face if he, of all people, came knocking on the door to express concern. Clenching his fist, he turned away from the door with a growl. Why did these people affect him this way? Why couldn't he just ignore them? They weren't important. They were just a couple of idiots who'd gotten in his way a time or two. All that mattered was the YF-21. Proving that the YF-21 was the greatest fighter ever built. Demonstrating that he was its master. That was all. He came back from that little fugue to see the colonial technician who'd stayed behind with Kaworu giving him a puzzled look. "Are you okay, Major Bowman?" she asked. Gald cleared his throat. "Yes. I'm fine, thank you." "Did you want to see Lieutenant Coor for something?" the technician asked. "I'm not sure if she's back from her date yet, but she wanted to be in by 2030. Gold shook his head. "No, I was just getting a soda." He held up the Coke can as if to illustrate the point, wondering why he was explaining himself like a schoolboy to an enlisted technician. Good night, Specialist. The colonial tech saluted. "Good night, Major." "I see you're back," Callie said as she entered the room to find Kozue back at the desk, poring over the Valkyrie flight manual. "How was your date?" "Not bad," Kozue admitted. "Dyson can't dance, and he's only about a third as witty as he thinks he is, but he's decent company once you get past his third-grade mentality. And he didn't put up a fight about getting me back here on time." "Well, that's good." Callie unlaced her boots, pulled them off and stood them in the corner, then stripped off her coverall, hung it up on the hook on the back of the door, and climbed up to the top bunk in her skivvies. "I just saw Major Bowman standing around in the hall," she said. "He looked kind of weird." "What else is new?" Kozue said, still reading. "No, I mean, lost or something. Like he wanted to do something, but couldn't remember what it was. He said something about going for a soda, but he already had a can of Coke with a great big dent in it. What's that about?" Kozue shrugged. "Who can tell with Guld?" she said rhetorically. "Maybe he's sniffing spice. How's your investigation coming?" "I'm not sure," Kelly admitted with a sigh. "I kind of hit the wall about half an hour ago. The display has just stopped making sense. I'm going to get a few hours of sleep and go at it again." Kozue nodded. "Sounds like a plan. I'm going to rack out myself at the end of this chapter and finish the rest before the pilots' meeting in the morning." Kelly switched off the overhead light and crawled under the covers, turning to face the wall. "Night, Lieutenant." "Night, Callie," Kozue replied. Saturday, July 10th, 2410. "All right, kids," said Major General Cheryl Zukowski from behind her desk. "All the excitement we've had over the last couple of days has thrown our schedule off a little bit, but we still have a starfighter evaluation to finish here, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. We're going to do the remaining practical pieces of the competition today, boys and girls. That means the single work this morning and the free-for-all after lunch." The diminutive general put her hands on her desk, leaned forward slightly, and asked with a little smile, "Everybody okay with that?" Isamu Dyson stopped flipping a pen over his knuckles, stuck it in his sleeve pocket, and said with a lazy grin, "Works for me, ma'am." Gold Bowman nodded. "I'd just as soon get it all done in one." "I get the distinct feeling I'm being hazed," Kozue said wryly. "But what the hell? Let's do it." The morning was hard work, harder than any Kozue had done since passing her warrior qualification, but it was also a blast. She didn't have time, energy, or mental bandwidth to spare wondering how the other contestants were doing. She focused everything she had on doing the best job she could do, and let the chips otherwise fall where they might. Back at Hangar 12, in constant contact over the Stonewall Belcom private comm channel, Maximilian Sterling and his crew chief, Joe Frampton, noted with approval that she never once asked how the others were doing. Meanwhile, in Hangar 5, Callie kept working on what little remained of N2907C's control systems. When she'd sacked out the night before, she had thought a pattern was starting to develop, and now, after a night's rest, she was sure of it. There was something in the tangled mess that Verna Wills had made of the Viper's control software that seemed familiar, and she saw as she took a break from staring at the data to read the MP's report on Wills' interrogation, something familiar in the way the engineer was acting, too. The psychological evaluator who had examined Wills at General Zukowski's request had reported that the General Galaxy engineer appeared to be suffering from a form of incipient mental illness, a kind of paranoid dissociation from reality. But Wills had been examined by a General Galaxy company psychiatrist just 6 months before, when she was chosen to take over the YF-21 software team, and received a clean bill of health. "Who goes crazy that fast?" Callie wondered, and then blinked and stared into the corner of the hangar as everything fell together in her head. She turned to her computer and stabbed at the keys, rearranging the fragmented data, testing her theory. Sure enough, once she knew which way to push it, the pattern emerged, clear as day. The Viper's ejection seat control system, and, it could reasonably be extrapolated, its flight dynamics computer, had been monkey-wrenched using a very specific programming trick, one that would have been foreign to most of the galaxy's computer scientists. Callie only recognized it because of the vast amount of information, relevant and probably not, that she'd lately been shoving into her head as she prepared to take the Certified Master Technician exam. It all made sense now. The technique Wills had used to sabotage Kozue's Viper suggested a clear cause for her psychological condition. Callie was certain of it, but being certain and being able to prove it were two different things. She needed evidence. And with N2907C a pile of charred slag, there was only one place on Muroc 3 where she stood any chance of finding it. Rising from her seat, she clapped the laptop shut, tucked it under her arm, and went outside to collect the two WDF military police who were on guard outside. A few minutes later, she walked into the hangar assigned to General Galaxy with a pair of armored MPs 2 paces behind her. Lab-coated technicians looked up from their work, puzzled, as the colonial technician walked up to Jerry Markham, who stood by the console of the computer unit to which the YF-21 was connected whenever it was in the hangar. "This is a restricted area," Markham said, but before he could get any more of his objection out, Kelly cut him off. "I need to see the operating specifications and source documents for the YF-21's control system right now," she said. Markham blinked. "What? Don't be stupid. That's General Galaxy proprietary information." Scowling, he added dismissively, "Get out of here before I have you thrown out." "Listen," Callie told him, not coming any closer, but fixing him with a hard stare. "I'm investigating the crash of Nebula 2907 Constellation at the personal instruction of Rear Admiral William Adama. Now you will give me the information I need, or I'll ask the engineer who replaces you when you go to the stockade." Markham went red in the face. "I don't care what any admiral in your pisspot navy wants, Colonial. That information is company confidential and you can't have it." With an air of finality, he started to turn back to his console. "Now I believe I told you to leave." "Sergeant Becker," Callie snapped. "Ma'am," said the MP on her right. "This man is obstructing my investigation." Instantly, Becker drew his gallant H-90 sidearm, leveling it at Markham's chest while his colleague moved up from Callie's left to provide support. "Move away from the console and put your hands on your head, sir," Becker commanded the engineer. "Slowly. Do it now." Markham's eyebrows flew up. "What the? This is outrageous! I'll do no such..." "Now, sir," Becker said, making the tiniest of gestures with the muzzle of his H-90. Markham looked like he might keep protesting until he looked from Becker to the other MP and saw that he was just as serious. Throwing up his hands, the engineer snarled, "Fine, have it your way, but there will be consequences for this. General Galaxy is a well-regarded WDF contractor. You can't treat us this way." "If I had time to go through proper channels, I would," Callie told him, stepping around to the console. "For what it's worth, I don't intend to let your competitors get a look at any of this data. I only need it for my investigation." Markham folded his arms and glowered. "Believe me, specialist, the consequences I've already mentioned will be nothing compared to what will happen if that information finds its way to Shinsei or Stonewall." Callie let him grumble. She didn't care about corporate politics or trade secrets. She just wanted to know if the sinking suspicion she was developing was founded. When lunchtime came, Kozue climbed gratefully from the cockpit of Seraph Blue, and stood, helmet in hand, watching as Frampton and his crew went to work. The techs surrounded the Valkyrie, pulling off access panels and plugging in diagnostic equipment. "How'd she handle?" Max asked. "Great," Kozue said. "I could have done better in the Batroid Assault course, I think," she admitted. "I didn't get much time at all on Batroid mode before I had to leave AVT, and the VX doesn't handle much like a Valkyrie. I don't think I lost many points, but it wasn't as smooth a performance as it could have been. Everything else went really well. I don't know how the others did, but based on my own performance, I think we should still be in the hunt." Max nodded. "Good job," he said, smiling. "Hit the showers and get some lunch. We'll have her prepped for the next phase when you get back. Launch time is 13:30. Kozue looked at her flight suit's wrist chron. "Plenty of time," she said. "Care to join me?" Max gave her a mildly bemused look, and after a moment she felt her face burning with a furious blush. "For lunch," she said quickly. "Not the other thing." Max kept giving her the look for a moment more, then let her off the hook and smiled. "No, I think I'd better stay here and help Joe prep the bird," he said. "There are a couple of things I always like to do to a Valkyrie before a fight. Maybe I'm just superstitious, but they've always brought me and Miria home." Kozue didn't miss the subtle way in which Max leaned very slightly on his wife's name, but she didn't need the reminder. She was already kicking herself for her little Freudian slip. "Okay, well, see you after lunch, then," she said. She looked around, then handed him her helmet, just a little awkwardly. He accepted it with a smile, and she turned and went to the hangar's little locker room to shower and change. She didn't feel like putting on her full Colonial Warrior duty kit, and she was technically detached from her squadron anyway. So she put on a Stonewall tech coverall and her boots, and went down to the admin building for lunch. Guld and Dyson were in the officer's mess when she arrived, sitting at opposite ends of the room and not looking at each other. Guld was alone, making notes on a clipboard. Dyson had a couple of the Shinsei techs with him, including the blonde Kozue had seen him with the afternoon before. "Hey, Lieutenant Kaworu," Dyson said, raising a hand. "Come on over and sit with us." Kozue accepted a tray with the day's offering, burger and fries, just like back at Otori Academy, from one of the cooks, grabbed a Coke out of the ice bucket, and headed over. "Are you sure I'm welcome?" she asked wryly, but the blonde just smiled. "Sure, have a seat. I'm Lucy McMillan," she said, holding out a hand for Kozue to shake. "I know Isamu can't help being Isamu," she said cheerfully. "Besides, you're a Colonial Warrior, right? So when this is all over, you'll go back to your Battlestar and he'll probably never see you again." Kozue snorted, grinning. "How very practical-minded of you," she said. Lucy shrugged. "I'm an engineer," she said. Dyson frowned. "I don't like women who treat me like a variable in a computer program." "Well, you have nothing to worry about, then," Lucy reassured him. "You're anything but variable." Dyson winced theatrically. "Ow!" Kozue chuckled. "I see you've got him figured out." "Compared to the laminar flow dynamics of Veritech airfoil, he was easy," Lucy replied impishly. "So how do you think you did?" Dyson asked Kozue as she started on her burger. She shrugged. She replied. Then chewed, swallowed, and added, "Best I could. You?" "Not too bad. Could have done better on the Batroid Assault course," Dyson said frankly. "Whoever designed that water obstacle is a bastard." "Pretty sure that was General Courier. It's supposed to simulate something the Eight Balls had to deal with back in the day." Dyson snorted. "Yeah, that figures. She's a real ballbuster. They don't call her Terror for nothing." He blinked, looking at the stare Lucy was giving him and the barely contained laughter on Kozue's face, then sagged. "She's standing right behind me, isn't she?" General Patricia Currier slid her tray onto the table next to Dyson's, stepped over the bench seat, and sat down, smirking slightly. "Don't worry, Lieutenant," she said to Kozue. "Dyson saying nice things about me won't affect his fighter's score." Gold got up abruptly and left the room without a word. "I see he's just as warm and personable as ever," Dyson observed. "He might be better if certain lieutenants didn't go out of their way to antagonize him," Terror observed. "Hey, no, what'd you hear?" Dyson protested. "I swear, I've made a point of staying out of his way this time." Terror raised an eyebrow. "Oh? Hmm. Well, in that case, I don't know. Maybe it's just the pressure of the competition. I hear the General Galaxy people have been leaning on him pretty hard to sell us their aircraft." "How's he doing?" Dyson asked with a sly grin. "Wouldn't you like to know?" Terror replied, matching it. Dyson shrugged. "No harm in trying." Kozue returned to Hangar 12 at 1300, feeling uncommonly nervous. Well, no. Nervous wasn't really the right word. Keyed up, perhaps. A little bit twitchy. Not at all like the glacial, clear-headed cool she'd felt going into the morning sessions. She knew why, of course. That had been the opening act, the warm-up. This was the real deal. The lasers would be ramped down to signaling power, the gun pods and missiles would be armed with magnetic paint rather than steel and high explosives, but all the same, this was the main event. She'd be going up against two of the galaxy's most advanced aerospacecraft, meticulously prepared by the best technicians their manufacturers had, flown by a pair of top-drawer test pilots, in a single frenzied three-way mock combat for all the marbles. She was going to be in the next best thing to an honest-to-God life-or-death fight with Gold Goa Bowman, the reckoning she'd wanted since the day he humiliated her in front of the other cadets and drove her out of accelerated Veritech training, that she'd planned for since Wedge Antilles recruited her into Rogue Squadron, was at hand. The Stonewell crew had cleaned and freshened her flight suit while she was at lunch. Putting it back on was like putting on a brand new one, even though she'd worked and sweated in it all morning. Laid out on the table in the middle of the locker room were extra components, gleaming and new, the hard composite parts that converted the standard WDF Valkyrie flight suit into a CVR emergency dive armor system. While she was gone, Max had added the modular chin bar and face shield to her helmet as well. Valkyrie pilots traditionally wore their armor only when being launched into imminent combat, unlike Legios pilots who wore it whenever they flew. The reason for this was lost somewhere in the misty prehistory of the early Wedge Defense Force. Kozue supposed Max knew, but she had no idea. She put it on slowly, getting used to the feeling of the hard but well-articulated protective shell, then picked up her helmet and walked out to the aircraft. VF-1S-82-2410-001, codename Seraph Blue, stood ready, her royal blue armor glinting like polished glass under the hangar's overhead lights. Joe Frampton and his team had not just checked over and prepped the fighter for combat. In the 90 minutes provided, they'd made Seraph Blue look like she was ready for her press rollout. Even the missiles hanging from the hardpoints and the GU-11 gun pod slung under the centerline shone like showroom demonstration models. As Kozue approached, all the technicians and armorers gathered near the nose of the fighter. Max Sterling appeared from behind them, and to Kozue's surprise, he had changed his clothes, too. He was wearing a Wedge Defense Force Tactical Corps uniform, the old-fashioned kind with the red chevron blue trousers and white jacket with striped half-cape over the shoulders. In that museum piece of an outfit, with his hair let loose from his usual ponytail, he looked even younger than usual. As he must have done when, as a freshly trained founding Wedge Rat, he took to the skies for the first time against Genom. Kozue blinked, swallowed the lump in her throat, made sure her helmet was tucked under her left arm at the proper angle, stopped precisely in front of him, and saluted. "Lieutenant Kosuke Kaworu," she said. "Ready for action." Max returned the salute with all the brisk formality he usually didn't bother with. Then, to her surprise, he gestured to the technicians to gather around. "Back in 8-Ball Squadron," he explained, "we had a tradition. Before every new squadron member's first combat sortie, we'd all get together in the corner pocket after briefing and have a little prayer service." Kosuke's eyebrows went up a little at this. She knew the man who was the squadron's leader in those days. Knew him pretty well, she liked to think, and he was anything but the prayer service type. Still, it was Max asking, so she set her helmet down on the floor and added her hands to the pile as all the techs gathered around. Max put his hands on top of hers, bowed his head, and intoned solemnly, "Let us pray. Lord, guide this pilot and her craft as they face this, their moment of trial. Be with Lieutenant Kosuke Kaworu as she flies into battle against her enemies. Be her sword against their armor, and her shield against their attacks." He paused, as if having forgotten what to say next, then nodded with an "Oh right, yeah," nod to himself, and added, "And please, O Lord, we beseech thee, don't let her fuck up. Amen." "Amen!" the Stonewell and WDF crewmen chorused, breaking the pile of hands apart like a sports team leaving the huddle. Kosuke laughed, the tension totally dissipated, and climbed up the Valkyrie's boarding ladder, vaulting into the seat like a veteran. Frampton rolled over the staircase anyway, but it was Max who ascended the stairs to personally strap her in and help her on with her helmet. "Neither of these guys is going to hold back," he told her. "Guld will come at you with everything he's got, for obvious reasons. But so will Dyson, because in his juvenile mind, he'll still be trying to impress you." Kosuke grinned. "Like I told Guld back at Pancho's, I'd be insulted if they didn't." She held up her right hand. Max finished snugging her harness, thumped her helmet, then grabbed the hand in an arm wrestler's clasp. "Go get him, duelist," he said. Kosuke powered up the Valkyrie, smiling like she always did as the fusion turbines growled to life. Guided by Frampton, she taxied the fighter out of the hangar, admiring the way the polished blue armor glinted as the ship emerged from the building's shadow into the blazing sunlight. Looking left and right, she could see the shining white YF-19 and the midnight blue-black YF-21 emerging from their hangars as well. Dyson gave her a thumbs up, which she returned. Guld couldn't be seen. The near-opaque canopy of his fighter was already closed. Kosuke's comm system crackled to life on the base control band with the voice of General Courier herself.
"All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. This is the part you've all been waiting for. The free-for-all. The three of you will make catapult launches, simulating the standard operating regime aboard WDF carriers, and rendezvous with Sky-I-1 over the primary gunnery range. Once there, you'll be given vectors to follow. When you reach your positions, you'll hear me tell you, weapons free. As of that moment, there's only one rule, kill or be killed. Standard mock engagement rules apply. Your flight computers have been configured to simulate damage based on paint coverage you pick up from enemy weapons. The last Veritech standing is the winner. And one more thing. Right now, your scores are damn near equal, which means that whoever wins the free-for-all goes home with the contract, and whoever doesn't just goes home. Good luck, pilots. Kaworu, your bird has the lowest type number, so you launch first."
Kosuke thumbed her push-to-talk. "Roger that, General." A cat launch? That was worth bonus points right there. Kosuke hadn't done a WDF-style cat launch since her brief stint in AVT, and it had been one of her favorite parts of the program. Getting blasted into space through a Viper launch tube was a similar experience, but she found she missed the space-suited deckhands who were always a fixture in WDF carrier environments. And now here they were, looking a little out of place in the desert sun, but what the hell, as they guided her toward the catapult at the end of the runway. Kosuke moved into position, felt a faint bump out ahead of her as the catapult slider nudged against her Valkyrie's nose wheel, her cue to close the canopy. The catapult officer, brilliantly visible in his reflect-taped chartreuse yellow CVR-3, gave her the hand sign for full power. She glanced in her rearview mirror, confirmed that the blast shields had come up behind her, then throttled Seraph Blue up to 100% thrust, feeling the airframe quiver as if with anticipation. The cat officer gave her the sign for burner. She thumbed the afterburners in, felt the Valkyrie lurch and shiver, saw the clouds of steam boil up behind as the water sprayers kicked in to keep her fusion blast from melting the blast shields. The cat officer made one final head check to make sure everything was good to go, then saluted, the all clear. Kozue gave him her crispest salute in return. He pivoted, dropped to one knee, and snapped his right hand forward, ducking his head automatically to clear the Valkyrie's wing, and Seraph Blue was off like a blast from a reflex cannon. Kozue was wheels up in seconds, supersonic in a few more, rolling out to the south, heading for her rendezvous with Sky-Eye 1. Within seconds, the YF-19 formed up on her right wing. Moments after that, the YF-21 glided eerily up on the left. Dyson, his grin visible across the short distance separating their aircraft, snapped off a salute. Terror's voice split them up as soon as they made contact with the Astrofortress, sending the three fighters streaking off to different corners of the primary range, moving them around a few times with private transmissions so the others couldn't predict where they would come from, then vectoring them into the center. It took about 10 minutes to get them all into position and headed in the right directions. Then Terror addressed them all on the common tactical band again.
All contestants, weapons free. I say again, weapons free.
Kozue grinned fiercely, all reservation swept away. Showtime. Kozue made sure her target tracking system was in optical mode as she streaked toward the center of the combat area, scanning the skies outside the cockpit with her eyes and the Valkyrie's all-conditioned camera. She knew she wasn't going to pick Guld up any other way, not with the YF-21's shadow generator blanking its profile from her active sensors. On the plus side, that black paint scheme might be just the thing for space, but it would make the Sturmvogel stick out like a sore thumb out here in the brilliant desert sky. She got so caught up in that she nearly forgot all about Dyson, a mistake which the YF-19's pilot was quick to bring to her attention as he suddenly dove out of the sun with his fighter's engines firewalled and launched a spread of missiles. Cursing, Kozue went wide open herself, pushing Seraph Blue as hard as it could go in an atmosphere, and dumped a couple of decoy pods. These fell away from the Valkyrie, then popped into a spray of flares, anti-radar chaff, and short-duration subspace jammers. Some of Dyson's mini-missiles went for the flares, others got confused by the sensor jamming and spiraled away. A dozen stayed on her tail. Pulling up sharply, she dropped the Valkyrie into Gerwalk mode and locked onto them as they sped by, unable to turn sharply enough to engage the decelerating VF-1. Most were destroyed by a spray of fire from the Valkyrie's sensor turret lasers. As the handful of survivors completed their turns and started homing in, Kozue pulled her ship inverted, switched back to fighter mode, and opened the throttles, diving toward the desert at full speed. The missiles tried to pursue, but ran out of fuel and auto-detonated before they could catch up with the speeding Valkyrie. Kozue throttled back a little, rolling upright to port and pulling out of her dive, and spotted Dyson burning through a long, looping turn trying to get behind her. At the same time, the Valkyrie's camera picked out the black shape of the YF-21 coming up from below, lining her up for a missile pass.
"Oho, so that's the way it is, eh, boys?" she remarked on the tactical net. "Gang up on the girl? Well, that's fine, Guld. If you want to share the glory with your old buddy Dyson, I totally understand."
Neither of them acknowledged her transmission, but an instant later the YF-21 suddenly broke off its attack run, lit its afterburners, and went after the YF-19.
"Man, that guy is like a wind-up toy," Kozue thought as she pushed Seraph Blue into a split S and joined that chase.
That was so unfair.
Dyson complained on sideband one. PsyOps is a valid tactical maneuver, Kozue replied, unruffled. Look it up. Back at base, another Valkyrie entered the pattern, landed, and cruised to Hangar 12. Normally, a good number of people on the base would have noticed this. The aircraft was bright red, after all, and handled with a certain assurance rarely seen even among the Top Gun test pilots of Mirok 3. But right now, almost everyone was inside, glued to holosets, watching the live feed of the free-for-all from Sky-Eye 1. Maria Felina Sterling taxied her VF-1J to Hangar 12, shut down, dismounted, and entered the hangar, expecting to find Frampton and his crew gathered around a display unit. She wasn't disappointed in this, but she was a little surprised to find her husband with them, since as far as she knew, he was flying Seraph Blue. "Maximilian," she declared, blinking. "What are you doing here?" Max grinned. "Hello, Miria," he said. "Have a seat. The show's just getting good." Miria went to the folding chair next to him and settled into it, perching her helmet on her knee. "If you were here," she wondered, "who's flying the prototype?" Max's grin widened slightly. "Kaworu," he said. Miria blinked again. "Why?" "Well, that's kind of a long story," Max began. The advantages and disadvantages each fighter had in this contest quickly became apparent. They were about evenly matched, overall, but each had strengths and weaknesses. Kozue was the best instinctive pilot of the three, sometimes avoiding attacks or outfoxing missiles with maneuvers that seemed to rely on a situational awareness no normal human could have, and her Valkyrie had the best sensors, especially its optics, and quickest mode transitions. Ranged against her was a ship with blazing speed, even faster than her own craft, and flown by the craziest damn pilot she'd ever seen, and a machine with astonishing precision and reaction speed, its movements unnatural somehow, disquieting. Of the two, she ranked the YF-21 the greater challenge, not because she thought Guld was the better of the two opposing pilots, but because the thing didn't move as if it were controlled by a living intelligence in the first place. Dyson flew like he was out of his mind, but he was at least human. Seeing the way the YF-21 responded to him, she wasn't sure what Guld was anymore. Back at Zukowski Field, there was one person who wasn't glued to a holoset watching the Sky-Eye feed. Callie Henderson was still at her computer in Hangar 5, digging through the data she'd wrangled out of the General Galaxy engineers. She wanted to watch Kozue fight, but she couldn't drop the thread she'd picked up now. The investigation had a momentum of its own. A pattern was emerging, taking shape with ever-increasing speed as she delved deeper into the YF-21's control system. And then, with a sensation almost like a mental pop, that picture came together all at once, transmuting the suspicion that had been growing within Callie for hours into horrified certainty. "Damn!" she spat. Grabbing up her laptop, she bolted out of the hangar and ran for the administration building as fast as she could. Like everyone else, General Zukowski was watching the fight, in her case on the big screen in the Situation Room with General Courier. Since Callie checked her office first, it took a few minutes to find her, and the Colonial Tech was slightly out of breath as she barged into the room and said without preamble, "You have to stop the test." Zukowski blinked. Why? "I know what made Wills go insane. It's the YF-21. "What? Explain." "The control system the YF-21 uses is multitronic," Callie told her. Zukowski's eyes widened. "Are you sure?" "It's right there in the operational spec," Callie replied. "They buried it pretty deep, but if you know what you're looking for, it's like a neon sign. The reactive adaptive assist module in the YF-21's neural control system is based on the old Daystrom multitronic command codes. Over time, it'll warp the neural patterns of anyone who connects to the system." You think test exposure caused Wills's breakdown? Asked Terror. Callie nodded. Her behavior fits Daystrom's pattern. Paranoia, dissociation, eventually homicidal disregard for people she views as her enemies.